Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
There's nothing like a birthday party that it where you are splashed or get to splash your enemies with a bunch of white milk-like, well, it probably was milk, fluid. That is how the Kurt Angle returned to Pittsburgh, returned to SmackDown, went, Nick. A familiar sight, going back to, as Michael Cole said, channeling 2001. I can't think of two better foils than Otis and Chad Gable. And Gable Stevenson went from being a cold towards Braun Strowman, which is interesting, to rivaling Sami Zayn for enthusiasm, sending us Kurt Angle as he sprayed that hose of milk all over Gable and Otis. What did you think of the show closing segment? I mean, it was fun, but it also served to kind of introduce a larger audience to Stevenson a bit.
Well, I think the most notable part was that it was an exciting opportunity for the Alpha Academy. I think that they really made the segment, and they were the best part of everything involving them and the backstage segments involving Kurt Angle tonight. I don't think that at the end of the day, this was a notable appearance for Gable Stevenson at all. I think that it was run-of-the-mill. I think it really wasn't helpful if you're going to have a long-term plan to have him be special, to have him be splashing anybody with any milk-like substances. I don't know that that's going to be main eventing any WrestleMania anytime soon. And, you know, I think it's hard not to acknowledge that this was a different Kurt Angle than we were used to. He looked a little fragile out there, and by little, I'm being kind. And I think that was really the story of the segment that people are going to be talking about or avoiding talking about. But really, I'm excited for Alpha Academy to have had that moment. I'm sure that was a dream come true, and it was an exciting moment for people who have rooted for them. And really, they got their flowers for really hard work over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm trying to think who else would have worked in this role for being foils for Angle. I mean, with Gable and his amateur wrestling background and Otis too, and Gable's, you know, mouthing off to them and you know, just doing what he does so well. They were perfect foils. I think the fans got more satisfaction out of that because they were so perfect to be the recipients of it. And yeah, I mean, what you said about Kurt's true, you know, I mean, he's looks, you know, older and more fragile than his age, but man, he has been through a lot. He put himself through a lot, both, you know, physically, but also, well, physically in the ring, but also with, you know, a pain pill addiction. And, you know, he's talked about that real openly, and he's been arrested for it too, driving under the influence. And this is a public appearance that showed he is older and has paid a price for a lot of the way that he's lived his life. But, seemed like the crowd was happy to see him, and it was fun seeing him back and hearing that music again.
Right, that's exactly right, Wade. You know, the crowd was willing that segment to go well, so it was going to go well, and that's the real takeaway from this, that Kurt Angle had a great moment to return to Pittsburgh. You know, when you think about who the foils could have been if not the Alpha Academy, I think the obvious answer would have been Baron Corbin to get some form of revenge on him from WrestleMania, and I think that would have worked just fine, but this felt a little bit more important. This felt a little bit more of the moment and a natural continuation of their Kurt Angle experience in Chad Gable, and that ultimately, I think, was the best part of all that we saw him involved in tonight. There was, although I must say, I did love the callback backstage with Jason Jordan and that head-scratching interaction with Braun Strowman. You know, it's hard to determine, Wade, whether this was an important show or not. And I think, in theory, there was a lot that happened throughout this show, some of it involving Kurt Angle. And for as long of certain matches as there was also a quick pace to this in which you had to kind of keep up with all of the different factors that were coming into play. And again, it's to be determined if this was really a setting the table for the head of the table returning type show, or was it really just the beginning of a stretch of holiday shows that ultimately are just going to lead us to the real important season, which is January. I think it was a good show, which is my prime takeaway from this show, if kind of unmemorable in the grand scheme of things.
What do you make of Gable Steveson's disposition towards Braun Strowman? For people listening to us who didn't watch the show, Braun gregariously approached Steveson and Angle. Angle introduced him to Steveson, and Braun said, "Hey, you're from the Performance Center. When you're done, we look forward to you being on SmackDown." And Steveson said, "Yeah, you'll be the first person I seek out," which could be taken a number of ways. And it's possible he's nervous or he just lacks personality. It also seemed maybe he was being intentionally cold towards him in a shoot sense because he just doesn't like him, or it was meant to come across that way. Maybe an early hint of where he's going to be as a character. But then that was what I was thinking. But then he had so much fun, next to Angle, just seemed to be having a blast as Angle shot that milk into the ring. It didn't seem like, he's going to be this, Solo Sikoa-like, where he's just like going to be cold and icy like he was towards Braun. So, I mean, I don't want to make a lot out of it, but it was notable to me watching it, and it sounds like to you too.
Well, no, I actually don't think it was intentional, nor do I think it was a hint in anything. I think he was so nervous that I actually couldn't even really make out what he said until what you just said right there. I went, oh, that's what he said. Okay, I got that.
Yeah.
But then the most notable part of that part of the show was the Braun Strowman character presentation right there. I thought that went a really long way in undercutting everything they've been trying to do with Braun Strowman to have him be a powerful man of mystery. I mean, this was like so corny and so cheesy, which, that character has never been too far from that line. But I really think that this was probably the clearest definition of him being just ordinary and goofy. And I think not a great, I would say, predictor for the long range of the Braun Strowman character. With Gable Steveson, I just think it was just a night to just have him out there. I don't think anything that we saw tonight is going to be a precursor to any form of his long-term character or presentation. I think this was a way of keeping the name active on the show and tying it to Kurt Angle, which would be, a natural predecessor for his character, and that's about it.
Yeah. I think so, too. Let me say, I think so too about Gable Steveson. And as far as Braun goes, it was a weird presentation, and I don't know if it came across as phony or, maybe they just didn't hit the notes they were intending to in terms of the performance, but, sharing the screen with them didn't really have a payoff this time. And it doesn't seem like it would just be like for nothing. Like I think it's going to, they'll revisit it at some point, but
yeah.
I don't know the time frame of Steveson being ready. Go ahead. No.
I could see a long-term plan of having Strowman be the initial giant that Steveson takes down. That seems very natural to me. And I think, when you look at what Strowman might have been trying to do, which was, come across as the more experienced actor trying to help the younger person who he knows is really, really green, that might have brought in the overacting, the overperforming of that scene. I just think it wasn't great for anyone involved. And I think that maybe if that is the plan to have them be an initial feud for Steveson, that might have been a segment worth leaving on the cutting room floor for now and maybe building up in a different kind of way.
Yep. All right, well, let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then we'll move on to phone calls and emails, and you and I can talk about more aspects of, as you said, a newsworthy and noteworthy show, pretty much start to finish. Some good stuff on this show. WWE knows what they're trying to do and largely does that well. There's exceptions, and we talk about those. But, whether it's exactly what you like or not, it's clear what they want to be, what they're trying to be, and they are polished at executing it. And this is, I think, one of those shows, so I look forward to delving more into it with you. And you are Nick Barbati, a co-host for the first time in months. Your Friday schedule, I've been so busy. Nick, welcome back to the co-host chair, you of Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, now free for everyone on weekends on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. So if you haven't heard the news and you aren't hitting refresh on your free PW Torch Daily Cast feed, you have a good reason to do so every day, because there's a different show every day of the week with different hosts, but especially Saturday nights and Sunday, hit refresh, and the newest show will be Nick and Tom talking pretty much exclusively WWE topics. Nick, welcome.
Well, Wade, I'm so happy to be here. I love doing the after show, and now for the next couple months, I'm a little free on my Fridays, so I'm glad to be back. Wade, Tom and I are closing in on our 100th show, and I'm going to give you a little sneak peek to this week. We actually recorded tomorrow's shows yesterday, I'm not kidding you, and I'm not speaking hyperbole when I tell you, this is the spiciest Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure you've had
yet. Oh, my God.
We fight from wall to wall. Literally, it's crazy. So, I mean, we came right out of the gate. And if you want a newsworthy segment, listen to the first 5 minutes. That's all I'm going to tell you.
You know, I don't know how you put up with Tom. I mean, the outlandish things he says, the crazy things he says, the theories he espouses. And you bite your tongue a lot more than you get credit for.
I agree. Wade, you know more than you let on. I am the kind, quiet soul that people don't realize that I am. But, you know, we are leaning in our 100th episode. I've been trying to get, you know, some kind of sponsor to get Faye Resnick on the show. So, you know, we'll see if, you know, the morally corrupt Faye Resnick or the morally corrupt Tom Colyhue, who shows up for the 100th episode. I know I'll be there.
Absolutely. So this is the rare case where I introduced the co-host before me. That's how excited I am to have you back. But I am Wade Keller, the host of the show, the founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts that are free and VIP exclusive, including this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Todd Martin joined me on a simulcast of the VIP show The Fix yesterday, which was also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast Flagship Edition. We covered a wide array of topics, including some sinking ratings for Raw and especially AEW lately. Nick, are you shocked AEW is losing viewers by the week this season?
I'm not shocked. Actually, that's the topic of our show tomorrow, Nick and Tom. So, and you did not even know that, Wade. But
no, I didn't.
It is the major story of what's happening right now in wrestling. I think that there's a lot of different things going on. I think you look no further than the recent story with William Regal as a canary in the coal mine, that there's major issues there. And I think we delve into tomorrow why that's such a major issue. It's not just someone returning to Friends. It's someone giving up hope on an alternative as being something of the next stage of their career. So I think, you know, there is a self-indulgence that has permeated that product that I think is now at a turnoff. And I also think at a product that was developed with the intention of really allowing people to create, wrestlers in particular, to create memorable matches, but also story arcs that were definitive of their careers. There's no great stories coming out of that show worth talking about on a casual level. And I think that that's a major factor in people tuning out. It's not a show worth watching continuously.
All right. Well, I look forward to that. You guys delving into AEW will be a fresh viewpoint on that, and especially because you guys appreciate what WWE is good at, and I think I do too. But you guys don't watch with, you know, through fanboy glasses. I mean, you'll be critical and critique the product, but I do think because of what you appreciate about what WWE aims to do and does effectively a lot of the time, you bring that lens to AEW in terms of looking for those same things. And there's a lot that WWE is good at that AEW does really poorly for a variety of reasons, I think. You know, some of its budget, experience, staffing, and where their priorities lie. But AEW does a lot of things really well. And I mean, I don't say this because it's like some false objectivity. I enjoy and look forward to both AEW product and WWE product pretty equally. I mean, there's, you know, every month there might be a little sway one way or the other, depending on who's a little hotter than the other. And some of it is just the wrestling content and the entertainment value. And of course, just my job is to kind of evaluate, critique, try to figure out what's working, what's not, what's good for business, what's not. And they both provide different challenges in that way. But AEW is such a newer product and still haven't fully polished, I think, what they're trying to be. There's a little bit more to critique about that show than WWE. And it sometimes comes across as me being harder on AEW than WWE. And in a way it is, just because they're less polished at what they're trying to accomplish than WWE is. But getting your guys' perspective as people who are much more into WWE, I look forward to tomorrow.
Yeah, well, listen, there's something recently that I saw that I felt, and I'm going to address it tomorrow, that I felt crossed the line in terms of appropriateness. And it's going to shock you, but I'm telling you, I saw something and I said, you know what, this is low rent, or as we call in Jersey, like boardwalk trash. So I saw that. But, you know, Wade, before we pivot back to SmackDown, one of the things that I just want to say, and this has been, if you haven't listened to Nick and Tom's, my long-term stance on this is I am not in the camp that buys, like, that AEW should automatically have just assumed to be number two and be happy with that because WWE established. They've been around for years and years. We live in an era where what you did in the past doesn't really count. We live in an era where you go on TikTok and the first thing you see is people declaring, who's the queen of pop? Doja Cat. As if Madonna and Janet Jackson and Cher don't exist. I mean, literally, that's where we are with entertainment right now. So to have thought that AEW, with the opportunity to poach not only Daniel Bryan, but take on CM Punk as the biggest free agent of this generation, and Adam Cole, and not make a difference in their ratings, and not think that that's a problem on in reflecting the backstage mechanisms and how the product is being produced, it's just blind.
All right, great. Let's give out the phone numbers and the email and shift back to Raw. But again, I encourage everybody, there's so many good shows on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, and I encourage you to just search PW Torch and subscribe. It's a free show. And for sure, check out Nick and Tom's AEW discussion this weekend. The free version goes up Saturday night. VIP members get an early look, usually early Saturday afternoons, and they get the ad-free version also. So some nice perks as a VIP member. So if you're eager to hear what you just heard Nick talk about and you're not a VIP member yet, one more reason to go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. So the phone number, if you want to participate in the show today, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, please push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. That flags you on our switchboard. That means you're not just calling to listen in. You're calling because you want to participate. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Later on, we will also have a segment, Nick, with Javier, PW Torch VIP contributor. You'll get to hear his jingle again, and we'll get Javier's take on things. It's been a while since Javier's been on a show with me, so I look forward to that. But first things first, we've got some calls to get to and more topics to cover. So let's begin with, you know what? I don't have my switchboard organized here yet, and I want to be organized with it, so stand by for 1 second.
Put your glasses on, Wade.
Yeah. All right, let's begin with Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome. You're on with Nick Barbati.
Man, I've been excited for this. And Nick will vouch for me because I've been, you know, messaging back and forth. I've been like, man, when are you going to get on the show? Like, I got to have you on the show because I miss you. I miss talking with you. Wade, I always love talking to you. But, Nick, like, this is just rare. Nick, how are you, man? It's always a blast getting on with you.
Oh, Sean, I'm smiling from ear to ear. You know how much I adore you. I've been great. You know, I like being the special attraction. You know, why be the Nev Campbell in Scream when you can be the Drew Barrymore that everyone remembers more for doing a little bit less work? You know, it's something that I pride myself
on.
Oh, but, Sean,
I'm working you hard the next couple months, Nick. Very good.
But, you know, Sean, I'm glad to be back tonight and glad to be talking to you. What's up, buddy?
Oh, not much. And, Wade, I will say I'm looking forward to Javier too, man. I'm looking forward to it. I can't hold a candle to that guy. He is just awesome in every way. And I'm really excited to hear what he thinks about Bray because I don't have a lot of comments on Bray, I guess, because I'm not, you know, good with those kind of stories. And, I, we still have really no idea, you know, where they might be going. But so I really want to hear what he has to say on that. Just, you know, sidebar. It was a good show, too. I agree. I mean, it was – Nick, I think you put it really well. It was kind of just – I don't think it meant much in the whole scheme of things because, you know, there were a lot of things that happened again, but it was just kind of, you know – I guess I wanted to hear what you guys – I mean, well, Kurt was – I mean, that last segment was fun to me. I really enjoyed it. I mean, most times I look at that stuff and I just kind of roll my eyes and I'm like, But Kurt did, I think, what he was, you know, doing pretty well. And Chad Gable and Otis are just, you know, they've done really well in their roles, even though they've, you know, been defined to somewhat of a low point. But at the same time, they're funny. And they get you invested in whatever segment they're doing, which is really cool. So I thought it was fine. And Gable, I'm curious to see what they do with him in the next, you know, couple of years when he's able to get, you know, wrestling, you know, more full time because, you know, I'm intrigued by him. And but going back to the top segment of the show with the Usos, I thought the match was really good. I didn't get – I guess I wasn't as invested in it just because, you know, I knew the Usos were winning. The near falls were good, but they weren't enough to really get me like, oh, they got it. No, you know, I just kind of, the Usos are going to win. It was a good match for what it was. Like, were you guys, like, super invested in it? Like, did you think there was any chance that Sheamus and Butch were going to win? As good as they've been, and I like what Sheamus is doing, I just wasn't – I knew they weren't going to win this match. What did y'all think?
Nick, I didn't expect a title change, but I thought they did a good job coming close to convincing me it might happen based on the drama in the match.
Well, I thought they did a fine job. I wouldn't say good. The issue here, Sean, is, you know, I'm okay with Roman not being on every show. I just want to say that. I'm fine with them pacing him out. I think it adds to the strength of his character. The problem is that the shows, when he's not there, they feel every bit of him not being there in terms of importance. And I think that's the challenge here was if he's not there, I didn't anticipate the championship changing. Now, that doesn't mean that won't happen at some point, that the title won't change hands on a show that he's just not booked on, and there will be a shock factor there. But it didn't. There's a feeling, there's a tangible feeling on if something important is going to happen or if it's going to be one of those shows where when you look at the bloodline, there's just a little nuance that is going to shift there, but nothing really game-changing in terms of their storyline. And that's how I felt about tonight. I also kind of feel like at this point with the Brawling Brutes feud with the bloodline, we're now at that point where we've gone all the way up the mountain of importance, and the peak of that mountain was War Games, which even then they chose to focus on Kevin Owens quite a bit. And now we're coming down from it, which is, there's still going to be some lingering matches, but nothing that really reignites the feud or starts a whole new layer of importance there. So I just feel like that's where we are with this. One of my takeaways from this show is I like that they build up the return of Roman and that it is in the forefront and something that makes the shows coming up feel worth tuning in for. And he is an eternally special character at this point. I think he does feel like he's towering over the rest. But there is kind of that moment where when I watched that last backstage segment with Jey Uso and Sami Zayn, where it's like, okay, we know we have something here, but now we're spreading this out a little too thin with how we're dragging this out and the little hints here and there. I do think we're at the point where either let them fully gel and let them almost team, if you would, or let's start getting to the next level of this storyline, because I think now we're pushing this a bit too much, especially in the weeks when Paul and Roman aren't there.
Nick, what could they have done to add more drama to the match? Because you said, you know, it was fine but not great, or, you know, whatever the words used in terms of the execution of the story of the match and creating a sense of jeopardy for the Usos. Was there anything you can do given the situation? Or, like Sean says, come on. What's Sheamus and Butch aren't going to end the Usos' reign after all the drama with New Day. So could they have done that and brought you along a little deeper into thinking it might happen?
Well, you know what I would have really liked is to kind of almost begin a storyline with Jay and Sammy are getting along so well, and now Jimmy's suddenly on the outs, right? Like, Jimmy's been rooting for them to get along so well, and it's kind of like when, like, a friend wants to bridge two different friends together, and then those two friends start hanging out and don't invite you, and you're like, hey, wait a minute, I wanted you to be friends, but not like this. I do think, like, I mean, having some tension moments within the match, right, where you see Jimmy kind of looking like the weak nipple on the mama cat. I think that would have been something that you're like, oh, wait a minute. We're moving the storyline in a different direction, and this might be the match that really triggers a real shift in this. I think something like that could have added more drama. But I really liked the moment of Solo Sikoa, by the way, doing the reverse rock bottom, whatever they call it, on
Ridge Holland.
I thought that was a really, really good moment. That's something I would like to see more of.
And they're setting up a number of matches for Solo. You know, they announced Riddle, by the way, newsworthy. He's going to be out roughly 6 weeks because of the injury with a chair hip attack or whatever that was on Monday. And they said he'll be out about 6 weeks. So I think that's a match. We might see Riddle versus Solo at the Rumble in a one-on-one match or cross paths in the Rumble just based on the timing of Riddle's return. And they've set up, they've suggested Kevin Owens against Solo, and now we've got Holland, who might be first in line to job to Solo in a one-on-one match. They definitely are putting, lining up potential rivals or opponents for him to knock down who have issues with them, and that was another moment. Sean, I'll throw it to you in a second, so I don't forget. Nick, elaborate a little bit on what you think they're going for with the dynamic of everything being great, but then suddenly, Jimmy, who's so happy, wanted everyone to get along, telling Jay, hey, Sammy did lie to you. Have you, what do you think about that?
Yeah.
And Jay just going, well, Roman said it's okay, so I'm okay. Is it too soon or, elaborate on that, what you think they're going for and what the trajectory of that is?
Well, I have said before, I almost, it's like amazing to me how people are, I feel like everything I read, let me say it, that on Twitter and just some of the commentary I hear, it's almost like assumed that in the next couple months, Sammy is kicked out or turns on the bloodline, and this leads to some match in Montreal in February between Roman and Sammy. That's not how I see this going. I still see Jay being the one that's out. Because I just think, and I've said this repeatedly, so I apologize if this sounds like, oh my gosh, we're going down this circle the drain again. But you don't have a moment like the one that we have in history that has already been called back to before, so they're not writing it out, of when Jay says, I don't give a damn what the tribal chief says, and just ignore that and pretend like that doesn't happen. If you watch shows like this is based on, like The Sopranos and The Godfather and whatnot, the head of the family always remembers that moment, and you never fully come back from it. So that's where I think that the long term is going, is there will be a day that there is a bloodline and Jey Uso is not in it. And if the rumors are true, by the way, I just want to say, it was the first one to come out and say, I believe WrestleMania is going to have Roman on both nights. And now you're hearing reports that that's going to happen. I believe that Jey Uso will be going up against Roman, if not at this WrestleMania, at a major show coming forward. And I think that day will be coming sooner than we think. So wait, I think you have to almost put those things in early, get those red herrings in place early on to get us there. Because I do think we are heading there, because they're leaning into the main event element of Jey Uso. They're leaning into him as being like the unsung hero of the group. I mean, it's becoming something that is part of the narrative that even the announcers are carrying through, which to me says we're heading somewhere. And real quick, before we just change back and go back to Sean, one thing that I had a moment during this segment, and I just said this, and I've had this observation before that, one compliment I have for both Butch and for Solo Sikoa is they feel like they've been around forever. And I mean that in a good way. Like, they are so woven into the fabric of SmackDown and into the storyline, the main event storyline, that you almost can't even remember a time before that before they got here. And yet they really haven't been here in the scheme of things all that long. And I think that's a compliment to the work that they've done and that they've really made themselves integral parts of that main event storyline.
All right, very good. Sean, back to you for any follow-up on that or anything else you want to add?
No, it's interesting where you're thinking, Nick, because, I've always – wait, I'm like you. I have a soft spot, of course, for Sammy, and I would, love to see – Sammy be the eventual baby face that can beat Roman, but I feel like Jay is kind of, they're leaning more that way, but again, it's still too early to tell. But I'm intrigued. I just think they're doing a great job with everybody. The acting has just been great. But I wanted to switch gears to, I just kind of want to talk a little bit about, well, actually, I wanted to hear what you guys thought really fast about the Lacey, because I didn't do much with Lacey, but I still laugh every time they're, doing new stuff with her. I just kind of laugh. I told Zach and Javier last week that I don't see the fans buying into her, anything she does at all anymore. I just think it's lost, and I think they're trying. But so what do you guys think about that real quick, and where you think they might go with her and what they could do? Because I just think it's a...
and actually, you've made me realize that I fast-forwarded past the Lacey segment, so I have to go back and watch it. Normally my report is up on pwtorch.com during SmackDown, and I got in late tonight, and so I typed up a report as I was watching the show, but I didn't have time to add analysis, and so I'm going to go back and kind of fill out my report, some details, and I'll go back and watch that. I see Alex's report on pwtorch that it was right before the women's tag match, so I will check that out. So I will throw to Nick for his analysis of this video, And your thoughts on, I mean, is this a reboot? Is it a reintroduction? Is it a turn back to something they had been doing before? And do you agree with Sean that, like, the ship has sailed on people caring because of how many reboots you've had?
Yeah, I don't know that it's a full reboot. It feels more like a pivot back to where we had been trying with her. I think it's too far gone. Let me just pair Lacey in with what we're seeing with Tegan Knox and others. We're just assuming that it's – well, there's too much happening right now in terms of reintroductions, but nothing really tangible. Like, sure, there was the highlight video of Tegan Knox today, and then there's this attempted reboot of Lacey Evans. But none of it is translating to truly meaningful storytelling in the ring, which is, I think, the real issue here. You know, when you think back to Lacey Evans when she was most impactful, this was not the character or anywhere near it of what we remember her being when she was really had the opportunity in that main event match where she was teaming with Baron Corbin against, was it Rollins and Becky? I just think at this point their lines are also crossed on whether we should be rooting for this character or not. And when people have that kind of, you know, crossed wire, the reaction is just to sit still. And that's not going to be a reaction that excites anybody or draws to mind any excitement. We've seen Lacey in the ring, too. This is hardly a wrestler that people are just dying to see, just presented in a different way. And it just, to me, feels like it's a beat too far gone. And with that said, pair her with all of these other wrestlers who have returned without much definition other than just being, you know, strong hands in the ring that fill out a roster. To me, I'm really not excited about the women's roster right now, especially on SmackDown, despite the influx of names and the influx of returns. And to me, it just feels, I don't know, just reductive.
I was glad they aired the Tegan Knox vignette. I was glad that
sure.
She talked about her knee injuries, her comebacks, her resilience, her fortitude through hardship. And she said, I met Liv Morgan on day one at the Performance Center and said, we share in common our drive to be relentless and do what it takes to become champion. I was nervous last week when Tegan showed up and it was like, everyone was just supposed to know who she was or the people who did were talking to you and the people who don't, well, you know, that's on you. Go do research, which is AEW's approach sometimes. You know, Excalibur and the people who buy tickets to the event, which is a few thousand people in each market, know this stuff inside and out. But to retain their more casual viewers and not make them feel like they're late to the party and they'll never catch up and this isn't really aimed at them, or to expand viewership, you know, you got to kind of not come across like it's a clubhouse that you don't know the secret handshake for. And
right.
I thought Hunter was kind of going down that road a little bit with some of these NXT people because it is such a smaller audience than SmackDown who have seen them. And so I was glad that there was at least a vignette where we got to hear from her and get a little sense of who she is and why she and Liv bonded. So I do want to give them credit for that because I expressed some consternation last week about, you know, another NXT person showing up.
Yeah, no, that's all fair, Wade. But the issue here is that still, even with that little video, there's not enough differentiation between with her coming back as it relates to Candice LeRae coming in, you know, Emma coming in, all these things were, and also just leaning in so much on like, let's get a new hair color for somebody as a way of just making her look different than the other woman that we have wrestling. I mean, it just feels really pedestrian in the approach of getting any form of character on these people.
All right, Sean, back to you.
Well, yeah, that's kind of where I was going too, because I was going to talk about the women just because, you know, from the fact that I did like that they had the Tegan video, but, you know, again, Nick has some good points too, but I'm still glad they did the video. They still needed to put it out there and show you about her and talk about her and what she's gone through. I think it was still a good way to at least somewhat introduce her, even though it's not the best way, but it's, you know, better than what we've seen in the past. And then her and Liv I like because Liv is a single I just wasn't buying at all. So, I mean, that's good. But the question is, Nick, and you brought it up, is, you know, now we have, you know, storyline, Shotzi with a broken hand, Raquel with a broken elbow. All these singles are out with broken, you know, whatever. Again, there's nobody for Ronda. And, again, I'm glad Ronda isn't wrestling us. You know, she doesn't need to be wrestling a singles match all the time because, again, it's wearing her out. It's wearing out off her special factor. But there still has to be somebody to go against her at some point. There's, like, nobody right now in the meantime that they could even – and, I mean, it's still 2 months away, so it's not like – they have to do it immediately, but I feel like here soon they have to at least build someone that there's somewhat of a chance that they could beat Ronda at the Rumble, even though we know that's not going to happen, but at least build something. So what do you think of Liv and Tegan maybe having a chance to win the tag titles next week? And then what do you just think about what I was kind of talking about with the singles division, you know, with Ronda in general?
Oh, wow. So I do not want them to win the tag team championships next week. That just made the hair on my head that I have fall out. So I did not like that idea. I mean, could you, at this point, do we just want people to go home when those matches come on? I mean, like, I think one of the things I really like about Damage Control is it does feel that lock hold on the championships. And even if they lose them, let's say, God forbid that happens next week, I do think that there is money in the storyline of even when they lose them, they get them right back. And it's like, gosh, just when you think that you've stepped on them one last time, they come back again like cockroaches. Like, that works for me because they still are the team, even if they don't always wrestle like such. I think Damage Control is still the nexus in which everything else should revolve around for that tag team division. And certainly, you know, having the team tonight get the championship shot next week, just, again, it just shows how shallow everything is, that they could come in, have one match, and suddenly deserve the championship. Like, I really didn't like that. With Ronda, okay, let's just go fully into Ronda. I like Ronda. I've declared her as having some of my favorite women's matches of all time. Ronda's not working. Something about we are very quickly heading to the territory where just it's not even like she's a heel worth booing. She's just a heel that people just do not want to see and they resent. And
hashtag fire Ronda Rousey 3 weeks in a row now, I think.
Yeah, no, I get that, Wade. But there's a difference between being part of a movement just because it's like fun and like cool and sexy and actually believing it. And I think people are really starting to believe it, paired with the fact of, oh, they're good. There's this good hashtag that goes along with it. Like, I do feel like there's like an energy there that's really shifting. So what I would do, honestly, is I don't know the answer in terms of who gets the title off of Ronda, but if you're going to lean into her breaking arms, breaking hands, and doing all that, I think you get to the point where it's almost like she's too violent to compete in the singles division anymore. We're stripping her of the championship, and you're sidelined to the tag team division for X amount of time. She needs to be rehabilitated, and maybe being in a tag team with Shayna Baszler helps them. I think they still need a mouthpiece because they're not even, like, doing the mean girl routine well. It's like just like fake slapstick with really bad comic timing and just really seeming confused by even when there's less of a script than ever. It's just, it feels blank, the whole situation involving them. And I just think it's also not only translating to the backstage area, it's now translating into the ring where there's just an emptiness in terms of energy that is surrounding Ronda Rousey. I don't know how they get out of this. Because you have Charlotte Flair coming back, right? And you assume she might be in a championship match at WrestleMania. You, of course, have Bianca out there. You have this rising tide of Rhea Ripley energy. You always have Becky Lynch out there as, like, the person that I think still feels the most main event of everybody, despite, you know, my feelings. So you have, you know, four really strong individuals right there. Bayley, of course, has five. You know, Ronda is not in that group, and I think if you force feed her to a WrestleMania main event, I think that's when the real turn comes. I don't think anybody at this point wants to see Ronda versus Becky, and that's the match that it felt like we were headed towards. I think anybody would rather see Bayley versus Becky, and that's really telling on where we are with Ronda.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Sean, back to you.
Well, first I will say, Nick, I do disagree with you. I do want to see.
You're allowed.
I do. I'm not saying that you're not wrong about Ronda, because I'm with you on Ronda as far as what you're saying right now. I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I think, you know, after the Royal Rumble, I think they can really build something with Ronda and Becky when they get them, you know, if they can get her heated up in a way where I think there's a way they can go. And I think they've hurt Bayley in a lot of ways too, but I wanted to go. The last topic I was going to bring up was going back to the Ricochet-Gunther contract signing. The segment, I think, overall ended up being good, but it was a mixed bag for me because I think the ultimate thing for me is, you know, Ricochet even said when they went to break you know, when they were just like talking, you could hear Ricochet like, oh, you beat me twice. But that's the thing, Ricochet, you've already lost twice. Like, I don't buy that you're going to beat Gunther. Like, I mean, I know you're great in the ring. Your mic skills have gotten better over time, but they're still not very good. They're still not going to build up to this where we know you're not going to win this match, and it's hard for me to buy in. And, again, New Day just ruined it for me. Like, the six-man tag was good. I like the tag match, but Kofi and Xavier are just – I want them to get off my screen. I'm over
it. Yeah,
that
got
joke
it.
With the oh, whatever they said about you're not performing, like, that was horrible, man. Like, I just – that's not funny anymore. Like, it's just – come on, stop with the stupid humor.
And the crowd participated with like this sympathy, charitable, you know, well, they want us to do it. But, you don't want to think you're the funniest person in the room when people are looking at you like thinking you think that's good material. But Nick, I heard you in the background nodding along about the New Day assessment. Comment on that and everything else, Sean.
I mean, I just can't. I agree with you, Sean. I mean, we broke up for a minute there. We were feuding about Becky and all that, but we're here right now in this moment together linking pinkies because I'm telling you, the New Day comes on and I just want to like jump out my window. Like I just can't. There's nothing enjoyable about it to me. There's nothing that makes me want to like rewind. It's like one of those things of, you know, I'm one of those people that when you watch TV, if I miss a line, I have to go back three times and watch it with subtitles to make sure I heard it correctly. With them, I'm like, girl, I can't be bothered with what just happened here. I don't care what just happened. And that's how I watch their matches, is with very little interest and intentionality. I don't know, you know, barring a major heel turn from them that really shifts their character and makes them, you know, really have a tremendous edge to them, how you ever have them as baby faces operating at any point that anybody should be interested in. I think that it's gone on way too long. There's nothing likable about it. And they've reached the point where they're like the fraternity guys who graduated college and then come back and you're just stuck. And they've like the time has revolved around them and they're stuck revisiting the good old days. And it's not fun for anyone but them. And that's how I view the New Day.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Sean, anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask what you guys thought about the contract signing in general and about the Ricochet Gunther, because that's my issue with the segment overall was I just don't buy Ricochet winning, and it's just they're trying hard, but I don't buy it. Gunther's not going to lose. He needs to be strong, you know.
I thought, given the challenge that they had going into tonight, that Ricochet did a good job getting what can be gotten out of any notion that he had the chance to beat Gunther. And frankly, if they did more, I think it would have been stretching credulity. I just don't think or stretching credibility to go further with that. You know, Gunther is a heavy, heavy favorite, and everybody knows it. But I think Ricochet had a good week last week. That main event was stellar. The video package on him was one of the best presentations that WWE's had of him. Because of his limitations, they found a way to focus on his strengths. I thought this was another good week for Ricochet, and I have been probably as critical as anybody in terms of just his, you know, kind of crackling voice and bad lines and poor reciting of his lines that he's been given. It's just been awkward. And I thought this was a pretty good week for him. I think most people think he's going to lose. I don't think that disqualifies him from being someone that people want to see bring the fight to Gunther. And I think they will be rooting for him while bracing for the virtually inevitable loss. How about you, Nick?
Yeah, no, I think, Wade, I don't disagree with anything you just said. I think, you know, Ricochet has brought the bar down for himself pretty low in terms of promos, that like things that are just serviceable seem improved, and I think that's a problem. I think there's an impact that this is having on Gunther, though. I think Imperium feels a little much more chilled now than it was a month ago, 2 months ago, and I just think that they're becoming a bit ordinary. And I think a loss of Imperium should still very, very much matter. And, you know, when you first think of, even before Vinci came in, when Kaiser was losing and then getting really heavily beat down by Gunther, that was an important story. That was important that that Gunther is not attached to losers. And I think by kind of skipping away from that, it's damaging the prestige of what Imperium was supposed to represent. And I would hope that they would go back to that.
All right. Sean, any closing words from you?
No, I just want to say, Wade, I know you probably like, man, stop with all the compliments, but I'm serious, Wade. I appreciate, you know, being a member of your site for as long as I have, and it really is just fun to get to listen to you guys talk about wrestling, and I just enjoy being here talking about wrestling. And Nick, I will leave you with this. As great as they both are, Becky will always be better than Charlotte. I'm sorry. End of story. I love you, man. I appreciate you. You are one of my good friends. I always love talking to you, and thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
Man, I don't know who Sean kisses with a mouth like that, but if that's what a friend is, I don't know what kind of enemies I have out there. Let me tell you, though, before we go on, Wade, let me just say he is right about one thing. If there is anybody to make something out of this Ronda Rousey thing, it is Becky. Becky can make that WrestleMania program work. I have full faith in that. And there's probably an internal piece of resentment to me that if that happens in terms of that not being my direction. But let me just say, it shouldn't be something that someone should have to work so hard to achieve. I think there's a more natural synergy with Becky and Bayley, and that's why it feels more exciting. Is, you know, both individuals would really be doing some heavy lifting heading into that, whereas the other scenario would lean very heavily on Becky to do that.
All right, very good. Thanks, Sean. Always appreciate it. We'll play your jingle next time.
Sounds good.
And, yeah, sounds good. All right, let's head to Florida. Brad's calling up. Brad, what's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Nick. Thank you so much for taking the call. Really quick, it's funny that you have Nick on tonight because maybe the last, 8 to 10 weeks, I started listening to Nick and Tom's show. I'm a relatively newer subscriber to PW Torch, and I love Nick and Tom's show. I absolutely love it, and I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to call in on one of these post shows and said, you know, Nick, Wade, can you get Nick on with you one night for one of these? But I just don't want to insult.
I ask him all the time, and he says no.
Yeah, the guy's got things to do on a Friday night. You know, the guy's
exactly.
A busy guy.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, I get it. But, Nick, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your incredible sense of humor, your wit. Even the way you and Tom on that Saturday show go back and forth and end it usually with some sort of little tiff between you guys. And then it kind of just cuts off. It's really funny, and I just love everything you do, man, and thanks so much. And appreciate that you're on tonight. And Wade, as always, you know, you're the best. So honestly, Sean pretty much talked about like every segment in the show. So like he stole some of my thunder. I was going to bring up that, you know, the Ricochet New Day, you can't perform stuff was unbearable, to be honest. It was atrocious. It was really stupid and juvenile. And it almost made me like not want to root for Ricochet, to be honest with you. Like it almost made Gunther feel sympathetic,
yeah.
You know, and the one thing I'll say is just noticing Santos Escobar and his presence that he brings in the entrance with the suits, with just the way he stands and his posture and his facial expressions. I mean, he seems like someone that I can just see being an enormous star as time goes on. And he always kind of felt like that in NXT, but I'm glad he's getting that treatment on the main roster. Even if the match tonight really materialized into basically nothing, I think Hit Row personally is a little stupid. I'm not into it, but I did love how Santos was so featured kind of in that entrance. And then even in the match recap with Ricochet from the week before, they really did put an emphasis on some of the good things that Santos did, and I liked that a lot, just seeing that. I don't know if you guys noticed, SmackDown has a new entrance theme, or opening theme, I should say. It's no longer, obviously, AC/DC. It's now this rap song.
It's, I think, 3 weeks old.
Yeah.
I think they debuted that, like, 3 weeks ago, Nick. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, two weeks ago, maybe, yeah. This is the third week.
Yeah, I just don't know if it was ever brought up on the show. I mean, kind of a big deal sometime, really, you know, maybe not, but, you know, sort of just something interesting. I think Liv Morgan's theme song sounds different to me, too. I can't really tell, but I don't know if you guys picked up on that. Really not important, but I was just wondering if you guys picked up on that, because it doesn't sound, it sounds like the same song, but a little bit of a different tone to it or something. I don't know, but, you know, just in terms of Butch, I honestly thought that this was the best Butch has looked on the main roster. Like, a lot of times, like, when I start watching on delay, and I know it's going to be a really long match, like, I knew that was going to be, you know, 30 minutes or whatever with commercial breaks, sometimes I'll, like, fast-forward through, like, certain parts of it. I honestly didn't want to touch the fast-forward button at all. I thought that Butch just came across really good. His moves were really great. I actually kind of thought, in a certain way, he was the star of that match. And I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that, because I don't know, there was something about his performance tonight that was better than anything he's ever done to me, even in the pay-per-views. I just thought he was really good, and I wanted your thoughts on that, both of you.
Yeah, Nick, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to tackle some of these points, you know, bit by bit, because, first of all, thank you so much for the compliments about the show. I can promise you, working with Tom is incredible. He's super smart and, you know, really incredible. Listen to his many different shows that he has out there, but he's quite difficult, as I'm sure you can imagine. So those fights are often very, very real and very bloody and extend way past the call ends. Like, sometimes, like, literally, Tom, I am waking up and this is the face that I have to see. What did I ever do to deserve this, Mr. Wade Keller? But anyway, I really want to talk about Santos Escobar, as you mentioned. I totally noticed exactly what you were bringing up in terms of the video package really highlighting him. And I actually thought that there was another real hint that we are not done with, you know, in terms of a peek as to where he is going to go. And I think there was a key thing about that tag team segment tonight. And even though he was not wrestling, that Legado did not lose. That was important, because I do feel like, even in a world where 50-50 booking seems to be still really, really just being very present, which is in that SmackDown tag team division, really tag team division all over the place, that they didn't lose really, I felt like, was a protection that needed to be put in place, but is firmly in place. And it, to me, it was reassuring, because there are times when Legado looks really small in there in comparison to some of the others. And, you know, that's fine, because they are the size that they are and their talent is going to get them further along. But you could still kind of have the old school kind of triggers of Vince McMahon and going, oh, my God, this is going to really impact them. And one day someone's just going to say, nope, they're done. And their characters are going to go full cartoon. And then they're going to be at the lowest of low card that we could imagine. And I feel like that they are being protected. And if I'm Andrade right now, by the way, Wade, I am pissed. I am watching the character that I should have had and would have wanted to have be taken by somebody else and doing quite well with it. So I think that Santos is someone who I think is almost put on pause for a bigger, better day. And I'm excited for him. And he is probably the person that, when I watch SmackDown, I personally get the most excited for the future of. And I'm okay with letting that be a little bit more patient in terms of when we reach a next peak for him. In terms of Butch, I couldn't agree with you more. I felt like tonight he really stood out for all the right reasons. I think, you know, not to make too much of a big deal about size, he is another wrestler who is prone to looking too small in a space for, I wouldn't say believability in terms of if you're a long-term fan, like you see it, you want him to do well, it's just something that your brain doesn't even attach to. But I think for someone who is a little bit more on the casual side, you would look at him and go, hey, you know, what's the deal with this guy? I think tonight is an example where that doesn't even cross anyone's mind, because he was performing at such a high level. I like the marriage, too, of the Butch character with the Pete Dunne character. I think they have found a sweet spot for him having that mad dog type character and not having it be the Scrappy Doo, which is what it really, really was when he first debuted. And I think that in general, he really matters. And I think that that's the good news. And, you know, this main roster debut for him could have gone really, really bad. And it's turned out to be really, really good. And I think it solidified him as a hand that is, you know, consistently on our screen. And for nights like tonight, it shows that we haven't even seen the best of him, and that's growth.
Yeah, and you were an early defender of the Butch character, right?
Big time, big time.
Yeah.
I thought that this was going to be on our screen for a while, and I thought that there was real potential, even in that earliest incarnation.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you feel vindicated, or do you think he's changed enough under Paul Levesque compared to Vince McMahon that it's sort of like, well, now he is what people wanted him to be all along, even though he kept the name?
Can I tell you, I miss the old one. No, I do. I really like that. I like the outfit. I like the costuming. I liked I didn't never loved the name, right? But I kind of I don't know. Something about that really worked for me because I don't necessarily love, you know, his outfits and how he does the hair right now. But that's just me. I thought he looked more interesting before, but I think the work was always going to speak for itself, I guess, at the end of the day. And in this case, it does, and it speaks really, really loudly.
Yep. Okay. Well, let me throw it back to Brad for any follow-up, anything we didn't cover, or a new topic.
No, you know, with Butch, it's funny. I love that 1940s New York City, look, of Butch. I actually did enjoy that look more, but I like the name, and like Nick said, and you agreed with Wade, I like the integration a little bit of the Pete Dunne character, but I wouldn't want to see him go back to Pete Dunne. I want to see him stay Butch. There's something about the name, you just want to love it, you know? Like, you just want to, oh, I freaking love Butch, you know what I mean? It's just, there's something about it to me that is endearing, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just me, but on L.A. Knight, a great command of the microphone, a lot of confidence, and I was surprised that he kind of got a pretty decent, or at least it seemed that way, a pretty decent reaction from the crowd where, you know, L.A. Knight comes out there, and they were really, like, kind of into booing him, and I was kind of surprised because it's not like he's done that much so far to get heat on himself, in my opinion, but it just worked, and you know, that confidence that he brings to the mic, and even the yeah, you know, it just works. It's so good. And the one thing I'll say about this show, more than any show that I've personally seen from Paul Levesque so far, is that it blended the wrestling and the entertainment, and then back to the wrestling and back to the entertainment really, really well tonight. Like, there was
that's
spots
true.
Where, like,
that's very true.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're watching that show and, you know, you're someone who kind of likes a little bit of both, like, you got the comedy with the Kurt Angle segment. You got some of the stuff with Sami Zayn and backstage. You got the L.A. Knight promo, which was pretty humorous in and of itself. But then you got the serious wrestling matches with Sheamus and Butch. And you got, you know, the Ricochet match. And you got even, you know, I found even the Liv Morgan Tegan Knox thing to be halfway decent. So, and I will say, you know, Chad Gable could not be any funnier. I love to see him in a spot like that, essentially main eventing as a featured thing as the show closes. He is so funny, and he deserves that. The thank yous, the just his whole demeanor, his ultra cockiness and confidence and arrogance, but in such a douchey kind of way, is so funny. And I was just glad to see that. But and not to go on and on, but and I'll let you respond, but even Karrion Kross, as much as I really have hated most of his performances and the things he's done on the main roster so far since he returned, I mean, I actually thought this was halfway decent with Rey Mysterio when he brought up Dominic.
Yep.
It was better. Brad, I know you're on a – you're on a roll. I want to jump in because I'm so glad you brought him up because I might have forgotten to bring this up. This was Karrion Kross's best WWE segment. He sat down. He was real. He was intimidating. He was a snot. You know what I mean? He was like wasn't a likable guy, but he wasn't making cartoon faces. He wasn't being the bulging-eyed bad guy in a haunted house trying to scare 8-year-old girls like he was for so long. This is a money character. This is somebody I want to see more of. This is, frankly, what I was calling for, a more grounded, less cartoonish presentation. I think he's been moving this direction for weeks, Nick. This hit the sweet spot. I thought Ray in a vulnerable position, Kross being threatening but also not doing anything, but basically, you know, letting him know you're on notice. It worked. Go ahead, Nick, with your thoughts.
Right. No, I love the, you know, with the metaphor with the horse. I love that, you know, there was a character in there. There was that mind bender kind of like type role that fits kind of the mystical elements of what he already employs. And there was just not a reliance on Scarlet. I really wanted to see him step into his own. And I felt like I you're right, Wade, this is something I easily could have just, you know, bypassed. But in the moment, I had the exact same thought you did, which is, well, this is the best thing we've seen from him. And I think actually it's because Rey Mysterio is the right person for him, even though Rey didn't do a whole lot in that segment. That's the type of wrestler he should be opposite against. You can't bring in someone that looks like Karrion Kross and performs like Karrion Kross and bring him in as some kind of killer destroyer and have him against people who are bigger than him and more confident and stronger than him. This allows him to come at it from a point of confidence because he's, you know, the bigger, tougher man in the segment, and he probably physically feels that way. It was reflected in his performance.
Absolutely. So, Brad, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, you know, take up too much more time, and I'll let you guys get to other people and other things. But, yeah, like, when he brought up Dominic, honestly, I said, wow, that would be so cool if they got Karrion Kross involved in the Dominic-Ray dispute somehow, like, where he is kind of this almost mediator but doing it for his own selfish purposes. I actually thought, like, that was, like, a really good type of role for him rather than, like you said, what he's been doing, and you guys just made some very astute points, and I don't really have too much more to add to that, but yeah, just the variety of the show in general tonight, it felt like a wrestling variety show, which is what I love about WWE, which is what I watch it for and why my kids love to watch it and whatever. Like, it was so much better than watching a 3-hour Raw with just a bunch of, you know, 30-minute matches and 25-minute matches and just match after match after match for no reason. Like, everything kind of just blended and flowed so well. And again, I'll say it for the millionth time to you, Wade, that's why the Raw needs to be 2 hours, because 2 hours is so much more tolerable than three. I say it every week, but it's just ridiculous that Raw is 3 hours to me. And Nick, again, man, and Wade, I tell you this, you know how I feel about you and your show, but Nick, I am such a big fan of yours, man, and I cannot thank you enough for – I'm so happy you're on tonight. I mean, I love listening to you, and I get to listen to you tomorrow and tonight. So it's freaking awesome. And, again, just the way that you end that show with Tom most weeks where it's just you guys are fighting and then it just cuts. It is so damn funny.
No,
but
you have to understand,
so brilliant.
Sorry to step on you gushing over Nick and Tom. Sorry, Nick, for doing that. But, Brad, they don't cut off. They just go on, and we have to cut it off because it just gets unpublishable eventually. So we I don't know, how often, we take probably 8 minutes off on average of you guys just bickering, Nick?
I don't know. You're leaving out the hidden gem, which is the start of the show, which is like he just hits record truly as I'm like mid-sip or like mid-sentence.
Totally.
I'm like, wait, excuse me, I'm glad you're ready, sir. You know, I'm glad this works for you. And like, trust me, it's a roller coaster ride. You're not ready for the full unedited version. You know.
Yeah.
All right.
But those sort of cut-ins just make it great. And I urge everyone out there, if you haven't listened to this Saturday show, The Intercontinental Adventure with Nick and Tom, it is so good. And Wade, obviously, you always do a great job. And thanks, guys, for having me on, and I'll listen to the rest. And if you have anything to say about that variety aspect to the show, I really want to hear what you thought of it, because maybe some people, more wrestling purists, like it better when it's match, 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 match. But personally, I like it as a variety show, and I like the depth of it tonight. So thanks, guys, for having me on, and appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Brad. I mean, obviously, Nick, and I respect why that people have different things that they look for in pro wrestling. But there's no question. There are no question that there are people who watch pro wrestling and want to see the in-ring product bell to bell, and they're not particularly interested in the other stuff. That said, I think there's more of a limit to that presentation of wrestling than there is what WWE does. I haven't seen AEW. AEW is, you know, at the beginning was point the camera at the ring, let these really talented wrestlers blow you away with their athleticism and the big spots and high spots and everything that they do that they felt WWE was limited and not doing. But, you know, I think there's less of a potential audience. But I think AEW can do what they do really well and polish up the presentation and the production and improve the character development and the booking, and end up with the great matches shining even more in making people creating new fans of that more kind of diverse indie Japan international non WWE style, which is a little bit tighter in its parameters. And WWE is very proud. The wrestlers are proud of the parameters that they have. And who was it from WWE that was just talking about? I mean, it might have been Paul Levesque on his was it after Survivor Series? I think it was on Levesque's Survivor Series media Q&A, where he said, you know, but it could have been something else. I might be complaining someone else talking about it, where there's certain wrestlers know their role on the card. And there's things that you might do in match one or two, or that you won't do in match one or two on the card that you would if you were the semifinal or main event. And, you know, WWE really thinks about that. They think about pacing things. They don't want things done. They don't want moves that wrestlers are kicking out of in match two that might be a key to a finish later in the show. And they think broadly about that. And AEW is more like just a bunch of booths set up at a fair. They're all independent from one another, and it can be in any order, and they all just do their own thing. Without regard to the big picture. And so it's different and teach their own. But that said, I do think people who really are into the matches sometimes underestimate how many people out there are like Brad, Nick, and like you and Tom too, where that variety aspect in the slicker production works. But I got to say, that would be stepping it up right now in terms of match quality. You know, under Levesque especially, I think there's been longer matches and better matches. And you've got people like Butch who are doing great work. You have Sheamus, who's had a great couple years now, and on and on. So I just think the in-ring product for WWE is good enough that it makes some of the other stuff like New Day, or you know, even the milk angle more tolerable for people who don't like that. There's still enough other good content. Nick.
Yeah, no. Absolutely, Wade. Right on all those points. You know, let's go to the long matches element. You know, You know, you have to be careful with the presentation of too many of these long, really elaborate matches on the television shows, because there's a difference between feeling like you're watching something epic and feeling like you're just watching something that really is designed to fill time. And I think that navigation is something that has been difficult. And or similar to what you're kind of laying out is WWE trying to be something that it's not and trying to be all things, and in this moment, we're just trying to get the AEW crowd, the people who just want to watch, you know, really long, epically timed matches. And I think that is the danger of having three-hour Raws, but also sometimes there's SmackDowns that are like that too. I really agree with Brad in terms of his assessment of this particular SmackDown being kind of like a blueprint in terms of the balance of backstage and in-ring. You know, there's some weeks anymore where you can watch the show and there really was very little to no backstage happenings. And while you might not like backstage segments, they are an integral part of keeping the show feeling, you know, like it's moving along, having, you know, your eyes take in different elements of the show and just making an overall more enjoyable viewing experience for more people. And I think that what WWE is finding its sweet spot. And sure, you know, listen, Wade, we weren't leading the story of the show about how New Day was intolerable. It's an element to it, right?
Right, right.
And it would be dishonest for us not to talk about it, but it's one chapter in a book that overall was very good. And I think that's how most WWE programming has been this past year.
Yep. Agreed. All right, great. Brad, appreciate the call as always.
Thank you, man.
I guess he's already. Yep, you have no problem. Thanks. Sorry for startling you there. All right, let's go let's go next to area code 619. 619, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. 619, you're up. 619, you called us.
I called.
All right. Yeah, are you there?
No,
they're not. There,
well, now let's listen.
No, wait, stop it. Please turn this off. My God, what is happening on these co-hosts I'm with? Someone, is there no producer on these shows? Go to the next caller.
Well, I, you know, sometimes it's fun when people call us.
I'm sure.
can find out.
He's going to get us all indicted with something we hear. Keep going to the next call.
He might be shouting his bank password to somebody in the house, and then
yeah.
All right. All right, up next, Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome. What have you got for Nick and me today?
My first question is on the Kurt Angle birthday party. I don't know if you noticed, but the doorman, I think he's a fairly big deal around the local indies. He's been wrestled for Ring of Honor once or twice, I believe. He's gone by Napalm Balm and Demetrius Kane. Do you think there's any interest in bringing him in? Because I know when fans see him, they always scratch their head and say, why isn't this guy signed by WWE? And that was like 5 or 10 years ago, I heard someone say that.
I do not know, which is often my response to your first question, Ryan, because you bring topics no one else brings up. And Nick, do you have any familiarity?
Nope.
All right, you're going to have to go to question number two, Ryan. Sorry about that. I didn't pick up on that.
Okay. Okay, second question is on John Cena. Do you think what he's going to do on December 29th is announced that he's entering the Royal Rumble, or do you think he has a better announcement? I don't know if you know his movie schedule for January or if you keep tabs on that.
Yeah, so they announced tonight John Cena going to be on the December 30th episode of SmackDown. Michael Cole saying first time he's been on SmackDown in a year. Cole said he'd be wearing his jorts. He's so excited. Michael Cole in jorts is disturbing. I don't know why. Feels wrong. Nick, yeah, I mean, it could be lots of things. It's on SmackDown, not Raw. We're less likely to get Austin Theory in the mix. I wouldn't be shocked if he entered the Rumble, but I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't, and it's something completely different. And I do not have any inside information or, you know, and frankly, if people do, you know, don't report it. Let people watch it. You know, like, I just – spoiler alerts for this. I want to see what Cena does without having 2 weeks of people – leaks from WWE telling us what he's going to say before he says it. But I know people like to be ahead of things, and that's fine. But anyway, Nick, what do you think?
Well, I personally hope he's not announcing a Royal Rumble entry. I just – you know, I don't really love that concept. It feels a little played to me, but – wait, I don't think him being on SmackDown prevents anything about Austin Theory from interacting with him, especially since it's pre-announced, right? Like, it wouldn't make sense if John Cena made a surprise appearance and then Austin Theory, who's never backstage, suddenly is there. I mean, that's a destination time for him to say, oh, John Cena's going to be there, I'm showing up. I think that is where we're the most likely of the obvious scenarios that we would see. And, you know, is there a possibility that there's a completely out of left field storyline that could come out? Sure, absolutely. But I think, you know, there's kind of a marriage of all these things. John Cena could come out and be, you know, in the process of announcing a Royal Rumble, you know, entry, or that he'll be, you know, at WrestleMania or something along those lines and be interrupted by Austin Theory. I think, you know, something like that works pretty darn well for me.
All right, Ryan, back to you for another one.
All right. I saw Jamie Noble is working as an agent. I don't know if you heard this, but supposedly on Sunday in Charleston, West Virginia, he's doing his retirement match at WWE House Show. Do you know who he's wrestling on that?
I don't, but man, was Jamie, you know, a good wrestler, and you know, he wasn't like a ROH legend, but I always respected his ring work a lot. I thought that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was going to say he's unheralded, but I think people appreciate him. And he was always regarded as a smart, hardworking guy, and I'm happy for him. And, you know, having kind of an official retirement match is pretty cool that they can do that for him. I haven't heard his opponent. I haven't even thought about who would make sense. Nick, does anyone come to mind that you think would be a good match off the current roster for a Jamie Noble retirement match?
Well, I mean, I would want, listen, I don't think it's going to happen, but I would want for him to get Seth Rollins and just as a tie-in to his experience. I mean, I think, listen, this is so weird that we're talking about this. I was just saying today to one of the students of the school I work at, I was like, you know, I much prefer to watch wrestling from my couch. I really do. I like the announcements and everything, and the announcers and just the TV edited experience. This is a match I would want to see in person. I really loved Jamie Noble as an active wrestler. I have to tell you, I especially love going back and watching, you know, him in SmackDown, was it 2002 into 2003 as the Cruiserweight champion. I loved his work with Nydia. I think that is unheralded. in terms of work. And obviously he's had great matches from WCW before that, you know, and beyond. But I think he's a special person who probably was definitely was a few years too early in his career to have really had his impact maximized. I mean, if he came up under the NXT era, it would have been a very different experience for him, and he would have had a lot more work opportunities if AEW existed and on a larger scale. And that's the shame of it all, but he's someone who has made a huge impact in ways that we don't always know that he's being an impact with in terms of his backstage work. So, you know, God bless him. I think he's had a strong career in what we've seen and what we haven't.
All right. Very good. Ryan, do you have a fourth and final topic for us?
Final topic I have is on Scarlett. I thought that story was very interesting tonight about the horse and where she came from. Can you, like, confirm that any of that was true with the horse, the poor horse having to be put through its misery?
There was indeed a horse. I can vouch for it. I saw him.
I think it was a metaphor, an analogy. There's a perfect word I can't think of. I doubt there was a lot of truth to it, but it also, there was no reason it can't be true, but I just think that type of story is usually just made up because it works for the moment. That was my interpretation of it. Nick, how about you?
I was more shocked that she was from Romania.
there you go.
I wasn't even paying much attention to that damn horse.
Ryan, appreciate it as always. Thanks.
You know, maybe the horse
thanks
wanted
for
to work, Wade. Maybe he thought it was time that he paid his own way. I mean, like, who said that the horse didn't want to be, you know, moving things? I think, you know.
I don't know what's happening. All right, let's go to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, you are on with Nick Barbati. What did you think of SmackDown? What's your question?
So I thought the show was fine. I was kind of not really on that. I just didn't really, because I want to get to the whole the women's division in terms of the comparisons with Ronda Rousey and Bianca Belair. I think I kind of wanted the same but kind of different. Now, what's different is that I think both Bianca and Ronda cannot cut a promo to save their life, but Bianca is a better wrestler than Ronda. So I think for me, I was just watching Ronda, was thinking to myself, if it ends up being Becky Lynch to face Ronda, and I hope it is in some respect, because I can't see anyone else who could defeat this woman, really, who's credible enough. And I just watch, you know, the women's divisions in general right now that are not top stars right now in terms of, you know, you have Liv and Tegan in the tag team situation, which that's fine. I'm glad that's the thing. But beyond, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's Ronda Rousey or Roman Reigns and there's everyone else. That's not good. And I don't think, I was watching this thing to myself, what are they going to do for this woman? They can't do anything else more with this woman as champion. She's not that good as a heel, as to what we thought when she first came back or whatever, and she's not good as a babyface. So I don't know what they need to do. And this whole thing with Raquel, try to get involved, the thing may lead to a match at the Royal Rumble, maybe. That's what people are, that's what has been assumed. But we think what needs to happen with Ronda, does she need to just lose the championship and just go away at this point? Because at this point, she hasn't been doing anything that interesting in terms of, since she really came back this year.
Nick?
Well, I think we kind of talked about this a bit earlier in terms of, I think that this is really low rent and it feels beneath Ronda and beneath, you know, the best days of the women's division, particularly SmackDown at this rate. I do think the championship needs to really be moved away from Ronda as we head into WrestleMania season. And I think her having a more firmly established tag team with Shayna with a strong manager is the way to go. And I think the timing is right for that right now. And I think even to have her be stripped of the title for unprofessional conduct. And, you know, they were really emphasizing injury tonight, Wade. I don't know if you, like, were listening to that in terms of, like, there's one thing to be, you know, in there competing, but you never want to be in a ring with somebody who injures somebody. And then you have Ronda breaking arms and breaking hands. You know, it might be a way to strip her of the championship. And I think that should happen sooner rather than later.
All right, Kyle, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I think going back to going forward for like next week, they announced like a lot of matches that I'm kind of looking forward to for next week. It felt like this show kind of meant nothing. You were really hyping up next week with Reigns' return and then the two championship matches and even on Raw too. They were just hyping up next week in general for Raw instead of the championship matches. Why do you think that was to hype up next week's shows and then have this show to be what, just about Kurt Angle's birthday celebration, pretty much what it felt like to me. So what do you think about that dynamic headed into what he did tonight for what they have planned for next week? What do you think, what was that dynamic about?
Sure. Well, Kyle, I'd be a big hypocrite if I didn't applaud them for setting up next week's show. I think they should always be setting up future shows and planting seeds. When we look at what they delivered a match at the top of the show that they were hyping for a while, the Brawling Brutes challenging the Usos for the tag team titles. And that was, you know, the main event of the show. And then they delivered a six-man tag with Imperium and New Day and Ricochet, which was, you know, the quote impromptu match, and the Kurt Angle birthday celebration. Kurt's a legacy star, a Hall of Famer, and he doesn't appear on TV a lot. And they added Gable Steveson. And I think the show delivered enough. Was it a blockbuster top shelf show in every way? Not without Roman Reigns, not without a signature a bloodline promo. You know, Ronda's just sort of, you know, in the mix now. It's not like they really treat her as a huge, huge deal at this point because she, well, for all kinds of reasons. But, I mean, that said, this was – they built this show around the tag title match and Kurt Angle mostly. And I think that's enough. Not every week is going to be bigger than the week before or bigger than the next week. And this show, I enjoy hype for matches. I enjoyed this contract signing. I enjoyed that there was a contract signing and that back and forth with Gunther and Ricochet afterwards. That made me want to see the match more. And it was fun seeing Kurt Angle. So I think watching a show that builds up the next week's show doesn't make it seem like this week wasn't worthwhile, because I'm a fan of hype in addition to the payoff. Nick, how about you? How'd you feel about
this show? Yeah. You got to remember that this is a month without a premium live event. So, you know, the pacing is going to be maybe a little different than we're used to, but I think in general, you still have to build up to something that feels important. And, you know, this week, as I started off by saying, might not have felt, you know, in the scheme of things, all that important, but it was laying the groundwork to some of these other matches being more important because this week existed, which made it worthy in and of itself, taking that into consideration.
All right, very good. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate the call. We will now go to Javier.
What is happening? I can't with this jingle. I literally can't.
Javier, welcome. By the way, I just want to say that Kyle immediately, as usual, dropped off after he got done saying what he wanted to say. He has no interest in what Javier has to say, no interest in what's going on in the rest of the show. Kyle, if I'm wrong and you're listening to this later because it's just late and you got to get to bed, you will score some points with me. But if you do not email me and let me know that you're hearing this, you're on probation. Javier, welcome.
Hey, Nick, how's it going?
Good, hey, Javier.
Kyle served a six-week suspension when he said he doesn't care what other people think and he doesn't even listen to the show until he hears me announce his name. And he served a six-week suspension. I don't know if he realizes it. I think he did.
I like how about 10 minutes ago you reprimanded me with a little thing about I don't know what's happening, and then you've just gone on this incredible tangent for the past 5 minutes.
I don't think it was quite 5 minutes. But people will be glad to know, Kyle. Some people will be glad to know, especially one emailer who complains about him every week, that he might be on suspension here for hanging up right away and not hanging out for Nick and Javier talking SmackDown. Javier. Javier, first of all, you can start with whatever you want, but after you start, we have a question from a fellow Torch contributor specifically for you about SmackDown tonight. So I want to get to that relatively soon.
All right. Go ahead, shoot.
All right, we'll do it. All right. So this is Alex McDonald, who covers SmackDown on Friday nights on pwtorch.com with a TV report alongside my most weeks tonight. He put up the only report on the site doing live coverage because I was late. So he goes, hey, Wade, this is more for Javier than anything. So if he's not on tonight, you don't have to bother reading this. Well, good news. One, who's the guy in the mask? That's not Uncle Howdy. Is it Bray? Is it Bo Dallas? Or is it someone else entirely? Javier, you're the White Whisperer. please shed some light. I also want to get Nick's take on this myself, so I'm adding that to the mix. But Javier, you first.
Well, the one thing I'm for sure is that the person who's in the video is not Bray Wyatt. That is an outside party that is, we're supposed to possibly believe that it's one of his personalities. The person in the mask who did the attack is most likely the same person in a mask pretending to be Bray Wyatt, is what I'm thinking. The other possibility that it is Bray Wyatt and the person, the person with the mask that we're led to believe is one of his personalities is actually someone who's manipulating a mentally damaged Bray Wyatt into doing attacks that he does not want to do. And the thing is, the promos Bray Wyatt's cut kind of could be read both ways, you know, because the last promo he talked about is "I hear your voices." On the surface, it was in reference to the fans cheering the Fiend and cheering violence, which is what he's trying to get away from. And then he's kind of like saying, you know, I hear you. You want me to be violent. You want me to attack. But then you could also say that, you know, they could also play that off as it's, you know, the voice in the video who says, "I know what you want me to do," that he's referring to that, whether he thinks it's his own voice or if it's, you know, the voice is in his head or if it's an actual outside party. My money is on it's an outside party that is manipulating situations, trying to get, you know, screw with Bray Wyatt, because I think the story is that Bray Wyatt really does want to make amends. And the people that he's wronged in his past are now coming for him. That's, I think, what ultimately is the story that's coming in. Someone mentioned with the Bliss stuff happening on Raw, I think it was Tom mentioned that, you know, that she's going to join Bray Wyatt. I'm like, I don't think she's joining Bray Wyatt, because last time we saw her, she was against him. And I think it's going to continue her being on the opposite side as someone that who feels that was wronged by him, although she ultimately was the one who wronged him. But, you know, it's still, you know, tracks that she has issues with him. So I'm thinking that's kind of where the storyline is going is my thoughts behind that.
Nick, I want to get your thoughts on that topic. I also want you to expand on what you think of LA Knight so far, and then we'll go back to Javier for his LA Knight thoughts too. But Nick, you first on those two.
Yeah, no, I was really fascinated listening to you, Javier, because I have to say I don't watch the Bray Wyatt segments with all that much interest, I guess you could say. Not to say like I'm bored by them, but, you know, I don't really know what to think. It's not my style of entertainment, so I'm kind of looking at it and just taking it all in. But even the idea that, like, we can see the other character means that it shouldn't exist just in his head if we're, as an audience, can physically see him, right? So I just think it makes sense that, like, it's like an outside party. So I don't know. I struggle with this. I've said this before. I think the makeup and the costumes and everything feels a little less than previous iterations of this character. I'm having a tough time getting inspired by anything that doesn't involve L.A. Knight. I think L.A. Knight is, ironically, the best thing of anything involving Bray Wyatt. And that's a really surprising thing for me, heading into when we just saw the big return in Philadelphia of Bray Wyatt. Who would have thought that, you know, I would have that perspective a couple months out, but that really is where I am. I think LA Knight is tremendous. I have to say this, but I did think, did anybody else notice he adopted Steve Austin's walk the entire show every time he was walking? I don't know if it was the jeans or what, but like go back and watch it. He had the exact walk of Stone Cold Steve Austin. So, there's something minor like that is like, you know, even it's not a knock on him for me to say that. I mean, he's coming at things with a real power presence. And I think that's a great thing for him. I think there were moments where he looked, you know, a little of a B-level type performer when he obviously came in as a B-level performer as Max Dupree. But even when he was first LA Knight, I thought, he's really strong on the mic, but something about this doesn't look like he'd be a main player in WWE. He does now. And I think that a lot of it is and also in how he's carrying himself. And I thought every bit of how he is dealing with these segments, and especially tonight, shows a strong, strong performer that's there. And he's really carrying his weight in a big way. So, you know, with regards to Bray Wyatt, I'm always just thinking, let me just watch how this plays out. It's not all that, you know, interesting to me. LA Knight is, though, I have to say, of everybody, he was really captivating to me tonight.
Very good. Javier, what do you think of LA Knight so far on the main roster?
Yeah, well, I want to touch on what Nick said, the Stone Cold aspect of
for
it.
For sure, yep.
Since I wasn't on the Wednesday show when they called Starks a dime store rock.
Dwayne Johnson.
My mind, when he said that, my mind went straight to L.A. Knight saying, at least he's not a dime store. Stone Cold Steve Austin. So...
Wow.
When that moment happened, I don't mean it so much negatively, because if you take for the best, because, on the Ricky Stark thing, he's more like they're similar mannerisms, but then, like, you start seeing the New Orleans coming out from him, and, like, it's like, okay, he's not really doing the Rock, it's just that they share a lot of mannerisms. I know that, in interviews he's given, he's taken from the Rock, he being LA Knight, has taken from the Rock and Stone Cold. And sometimes it, like, really comes across, the Stone Cold thing. Not that I mind, but because, he does give it his own twist. In the WWE, he hasn't done as much giving it his own twist, but, he's got it, when it comes to, talking to Mike and the personality and the confidence. And I really enjoyed him in how he's approaching this storyline, because he's smart. He's not being an idiot. He's saying, with the evidence that he has, he's saying, yeah, this is obviously him. I mean, look, it's him in the mask. It's this is obviously Bray Wyatt, because, he's being played. He too is being played by an outside force. He doesn't know it. But from his point of view, he's correct, and he is confident about that, and he's acting as if he's someone who's confident about that. He's attacking the problem. And this adds believability to what ultimately, it adds a believability factor to what's already going to be a more out there storyline, so it makes it easier to engage with. And in terms of, like, the voices being voices inside his head that we're seeing, it's more that it's a personality that for Bray Wyatt that is acting on his own volition. So that personality is creating the videos to try to get Bray Wyatt to act. As if, so it's like a rogue personality that at some point takes over Bray Wyatt's body and does stuff. I just don't think that that's what's going on, that it actually is somebody from, that he knows that knows him well enough to pull his strings. So that was my thoughts on the LA Knight and the Bray Wyatt thing.
All right, so next up from Alex is, what do you think of Cross and Rey Mysterio so far? I like the segment tonight. Cross is actually getting better, and his promos are becoming less confusing. That's a good sign. Javier, we already talked about it, so I'll just get your take on it.
Yeah, I think he may be knowing me too well, because that was my other second big point. Justified. This scene with Cross is basically a justification of everything I see in Karrion Kross. Because the thing that he brings to the table that is very much lacking, in my opinion anyway, in wrestling, is that he does have this aura of being a killer. Very few wrestlers have that. I know Minoru Suzuki, particularly when, not so much now, because now he's just Murder Grandpa and kind of more of a fun thing. But, when he was younger, Minoru Suzuki, he's going to kill you. Joe's another one. Joe's another one that, he feels dangerous. When he's, in a dangerous mood, he is dangerous. And you worry for other people's safety. It's the wrestlers that instill that gets the legit chant of, this person is going to kill you. That's very lacking, and I think that Cross has that in him. And I agree with you on that point, Nick, where you're talking about, when you talked about that, putting up against bigger wrestlers at first was a mistake, because your people who don't know him are just going to see, the size discrepancy. And they're not going to have that, but by putting him against Mysterio, that he's also looked stronger, better than, younger than, he seems like he's a danger to Rey Mysterio, and it would have behooved them to actually build that up first, because at some point, when you actually get, once that person in general gets the reputation for being a killer, then, for example, if you're familiar with Minoru Suzuki's work when he was younger, if you put him in the same ring with Braun Strowman, you're worried for Braun Strowman's health, not the other way around. So that's kind of like the personality that they could have done to build, And I think, like, the one criticism I really have of Triple H's booking is that he's kind of relying on the stories that they built in NXT with these wrestlers that he's bringing back, with the assumption that everybody knows, you know, and we're picking up where we left off, you know, which is, you know, mm-hmm. the Candice LeRae problem, the Gargano problem, and the problem with a lot of these wrestlers, you know, where he's just without actually really fully reintroducing the characters. And it's not just like a, you know, put on a video to show what they did in the past, but like reintroducing them through similar, not identical skits, but through skits to get their personality across on who they are and what they are. Because right now, I couldn't tell you the difference between Dakota Kai and Tegan Knox. For me, that, you know, they're the same character, one heel, one face. So, you know, there's no defining characteristic out of those two. You know, not knowing what I know from the NXT days.
Nick, how do you feel about that critique of Paul Levesque and how he's using NXT talent?
No, I think it's dead on. I think, you know, Wade, you said earlier there's like an assumption that we're all supposed to know who they are, and it's a struggle. I think one of the other issues is a lot of them, they don't just physically look alike. A lot of them also wrestle alike, and particularly I'm talking about the women that he's brought back. And so it's kind of hard to differentiate who they are. And this is going to sound crazy. Wade, you know I watch the shows week in, week out. I literally had to write the names down on a pad of paper as to make sure I was able to call specifically who these examples were in preparation for this call, because even I'm like, when I'm trying to draw the examples, I get confused as to who I'm talking to. And it's not like I don't know who I'm watching when I'm watching them on the screen, but there is just a similarity that blends in the viewer's brain. And I think that's a tough thing to ignore as us when we're critiquing and evaluating how Paul Levesque is doing overall. So much strong, of what he's doing is strong, and so much of it is a point of strength. But there are blind spots in any booker, and I think for him it's just feeling as though people who he knows and he has a relationship with backstage, that the world has a relationship with, and we don't.
Great conversation. I'll go back to Alex here. He says his third and final question is, who's going to win the Rumble? And then he has a little postscript, which I'll get to afterwards. But do we have early predictions? Nick, do you want to go first?
Jey Uso, 100%.
All right. And Javier, how do you feel about that, and what's your pick?
Nick, I love your love affair with Jey Uso. I do. I think you're closer now that Triple H is booking the show than when Vince McMahon was, because when Vince McMahon was booking, there's no way that would have happened. I think there's a stronger chance now. I'm thinking Cody. If it's true that Roman Reigns is going to be wrestling on both nights of WrestleMania, I think Rock is one, and Cody's the other one.
And for the women, I have Bayley for the record, because there's more than one Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Oh, good point.
I have Becky for the women's. Yeah.
All right. And then he goes, thanks, Wade. I miss you guys. I can't wait to get back on the post show with co-host after the holidays are over, and I don't have to be at work so early in the morning. On another note, Javier, I'm disappointed. I can't argue back on any of these points, but it is what it is. For the record, we never finished our argument on Drew McIntyre. I'm right. Oh, and make sure to plug my show. It's the PW Torch Daily Cast, PW Torch 90s Past Cast. A lot of fun stuff on this week's episode, including some great digs at Marty Jannetty and Sting Trivia, as well as a reaction to Wade's Torch Talk with Road Warrior Hawk. Talk to you guys soon. Alex, good to have you, even via email. And yes, after the holidays, you and Nick can fight over the co-host availability on this post show.
We get to mail in commercials now, Wade. I didn't know this.
The 90s podcast is great. It is a blast. It is so fun hearing them talk about things that I wrote about 30 years ago and forgot about in some cases, and look through, hindsight at some of my predictions and where I was right, where I was wrong, and they're surprised learning some things that they never knew about that era, and we're marching from 1992 into 1993. You can read along the back issues that they cover on a week-to-week basis as a VIP member in our back issue library. Nick, it is so smooth, the transition from content on SmackDown to plugs. You barely noticed.
No. This is an ad-free show.
Javier, we are done with Alex's email. I want to know what else you want to bring up from SmackDown.
Just a mild defense of Ronda Rousey. I think that one of the problems with Ronda Rousey is just she's like the best person they have, and the thing is that Ronda Rousey needs to have both a good personality and a good in-ring wrestling opponent. Her opponent needs to have both a good personality and good in-ring, skills to really get the most out of her. And since she's won, so she wins the title from Charlotte, and there were chemistry issues there, if I remember correctly. And since then, she's wrestled Shotzi, Raquel Rodriguez, Natalya, who's good in the ring, but personality doesn't, not distinct to bring the best out of Ronda. Let me see. Raquel, Liv Morgan, Jali, Emma, Shotzi again. I think Sonya Deville was in there too. So she just hasn't had opponents. And I think that, it's basically showing, the all the holes in her game and all her weaknesses. And I think that, that's basically that. I think all more than anything is what's killing her.
I did enjoy her line. They don't understand metaphors. And then she left the room.
I love that. That's my first note.
Yeah, she's just her being kind of snotty and aloof, but also oneself aware of how oblivious she is to so much of social mores. That makes it hypocritical anyway.
I actually love that, Wade, because that scene, all the other three women were all in we're acting wrestler mode. With the way that they were delivering their lines,
sure.
And trying to be snide and cute and stuff. And she was like, they don't know metaphors. Let's get the hell out of here. She felt the most real in that scene.
And I will back you up on that. The reason I liked it is because it felt real, but it doesn't change the fact that Ronda picking on someone else for not getting something in a social situation is hilarious because she's the most socially awkward, unaware person, on that roster as far as we can tell. I'm sure there's some contenders. Yes.
And the fact that she's calling it out while being in the same situation herself just goes to show how bad the acting amongst the other three women was.
Anything you want to add, Nick?
Nope.
Okay, so let me read another email to you, Javier. This is Briar from Council Grove, Kansas. He goes, what are you guys' thoughts with SmackDown and Raw opening with hot tag team matches such as the Usos and Sami? I understand the logic behind it, but do you feel as though they should flip-flop between shows? Have the Usos and Sami open one show and maybe main event the other? Match order. Nick, what do you think about what WWE's been doing lately?
Well, I think I kind of like mixing it up quite a bit. I feel like we were getting too much into a formula with SmackDown where you would start off with, sure, a long segment that kind of compromised the entire first half hour, which we're not moved away from, but you would always kind of lean into a match such as this to close out the show, and you would have to kind of sit through three rapid-fire commercial breaks. And it felt ultimately unfulfilling. I think in this time slot and how it was structured today, it worked much better for me.
Javier, what do you think?
I think it for me personally, I think it leads, when you start with a match like that, I think it leads for me for a more fulfilling show, but I think ultimately it hurts more in the rankings. Because I think what works best in the rankings is when you do something in the beginning to set up what's going to happen later. That way you'll have the confrontation in the beginning and then the match happens at the end of the night. That way, you kind of convince if the topic is hot enough, you're going to keep someone along the entire road, to where you're getting, where you're trying to get to, and keep people engaged for the entire show. I think that ultimately is your best course of action. But every now and then just to mix things up, particularly if you have something like, the Kurt Angle, segment to close the show, where in that case you're going to get people who are either going to be really engaged because you get to see Kurt Angle do something or some people are just going to tune out no matter what. And I think in that case you'd rather them tune out at the end than tune out, you know, in the middle or beginning of the episode if you put the angle thing earlier. But I think in this case, the tag team happening earlier was, like, fine.
Yeah, and it sometimes just has to do with what's the finish. Is
right.
It leading to something else? You know, the match order. Yeah, and then also, when you have Kurt Angle as your main event, a Hall of Famer who hasn't been on in a while, that's your hook. So you can lead with the big match. One thing I like, and I don't think it matters as far as ratings goes, is then I don't know when the finish is going to happen. Now, you know, we can say, well, we knew who was going to win and all that in this one. But, like, you don't know how long the match is going to go. When it's the main event and it's 42 minutes into the second hour, you know the match is going to go, you know, 15 minutes and, you know, 15 to 17 minutes. And you kind of know when there won't or will be a finish. So just from an enjoyment standpoint, kind of buying into finishes, I like it when it's, you know, at the beginning or middle of the show. Nick, yeah, go ahead with any thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I just agree with you. And I think this was an example where there was no major developments to build to. So why not get the match out of the way and get them the show to go in a different direction? And, yeah, it kind of breaks the formula up a bit and also doesn't lead to disappointment from a viewer who's tuning in, watching this long match if it's going to have that length, and then ultimately not have a title change, not have a major development. It goes from making the show feel disappointing to something to go, oh, it was just an unexpected format, and that mixed things up. I think that's an overall better tone to have exiting the show.
Javier, can I read another email with you guys here?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. This is from Wade from New Zealand. He goes, hi, Wade and Nick and all other callers and emailers. Good to send an email to the always spicy Nick for the first time. Always spicy. While watching SmackDown tonight, I couldn't help but think that Wade Barrett was channeling Wade Keller when described. This is an email by
Wade. How many
Wades?
I
know.
Three Wades. This is ridiculous.
It is crazy. While describing Imperium's feelings towards New Day, he was definitely making them Wade Keller baby. He was definitely making them Wade Keller baby faces by saying how much they despise New Day's antics and clowning performances. As for Karrion Kross, what kind of kick-ass killer bad guy sets his sights on a smaller babyface? And an injured smaller babyface at that. How does that prove what a badass he is? And finally, I also thought LA Knight's segment gave me mixed signals. He was obviously trying to be a heel, but then was showing fortitude by refusing to be afraid of and back down to Bray. To me, those are very babyface tendencies. Thanks so much for your time, and have a great rest of the show and evening. Cheers. Cheers, fellas, to be precise. I think with Karrion Kross, I'll take that and then I'll throw to you, Nick, and then Javier after that. I think Kross picking on Ray is not badass. It's a heel. Now, he's still badass, but if he's going out there after the biggest guys, now people are going to cheer him, you know, because he's a badass who's taking on all comers. Picking on Ray and doing so when Ray is vulnerable in a training session and, you know, intimidating him with inferences implications. I don't know which of those two I think it's heelish. It makes you want to see Ray hold his own and upset Kross, because Kross being arrogant and picking on a small guy. Plus Ray's a legend, and you know, Karrion Kross trying to make a name for himself and going after somebody who's older and he just demeaned verbally makes him more of a heel. Nick, you can talk about Wade Barrett, New Day, Karrion Kross, LA Knight, some or all three of those.
Yeah, well, I agree and disagree with everything you said. Because I think let's go with the Karrion Kross thing. Yes, I agree that it doesn't make him look like a monster if he's picking on Rey Mysterio, but he's not. He shouldn't be a monster. He should, to your point, Wade, he should just be a heel, and that works. That works just fine. Give me another one, Wade. What he said. Now I'm forgetting all the different points that he made. LA Knight. Yes, I agree with you what you're saying about LA Knight. Yes, he is coming across more of a baby face. And I don't know if that's a shade of gray type thing that they're going for. It has to be, because there's no way he could be. It's almost like you wouldn't want to root against LA Knight in this whole storyline. Why would you? He's got I don't know if you heard me make this analogy, Wade, like the Bray Wyatt storyline has gone from being a monster movie to a slasher flick. And LA Knight is like the first victim of the slasher in this. So like, even though you like ultimately know they're not going to make it through, you still kind of don't want to watch him die. And this guy's obviously he's not going to die on WWE, but you don't want to see him succumb to the slasher. And I think that's kind of where we're at with this horror movie that's unfolding in front of our eyes. And I like that he's showing he's coming at a point of strength, that he isn't backing down, that, you know, he's going after, you know, Bray Wyatt head on. I think that's That's all important. Because here's the thing you have to remember. There's an LA Knight character after Bray Wyatt. So he needs to still be strong. And I think that, you know, there's nuances to how that's being presented.
One thing I like about LA Knight right now is, you know, he had the falling out with Vince McMahon because he just didn't buy into the Maximum Male Model's character, or at least how he was asked to portray it. And then Paul Levesque took over, you know, a couple weeks later, and boom, he's back. And he is in his comfort zone, and I think he believes in what he's doing now. It doesn't feel like he's putting on a performance for someone else's vision. This is his character, and I'm appreciating his ownership of the ring and the microphone and the camera, and I think ultimately he's probably destined to be a babyface, but I think right now he is a heel, but he is, yeah, walking into trouble. So, Javier, do you want to talk about any of those things? Wade Barrett's commentary on New Day, Karrion Kross, LA Knight.
Well, I mean, and the thing is, that's not doesn't really matter whether he's LA Knight's a heel in this case, because this is just a case of mistaken. It's a case of mistaken identity. They both could be faces, and they have, you know, a reason to be coming in conflict. If it plays out the way I believe it's playing out, that this is more of, you know, LA Knight being in the, you know, being mistaken. So I think it's just one of those cases. So that could fit a baby face. It could also fit a heel versus heel. Ideally, you don't want that because you're kind of like, you know, because when it's baby face, you're like, dude, you're both being misled, you know, and then you would hopefully they would get together and, you know, and defeat eventually once they, you know, figure out. I mean, that's how comic books always worked. When the X-Men met the Avengers, they have the big drawn-out fight, they realize it was a misunderstanding, and then they team up to take out Dr. Doom. You know, that's like, you know, storytelling like 101. So I think that's more of the case. It doesn't even really matter if he's looking more babyface or not. And with the stuff he's done thus far, they've kind of left it. He feels like this, you know, because who did he feud with first? He destroyed the Maximum Male Models. And, yeah, he was kind of dickish about that. But, like, I wouldn't necessarily say he was heelish about that. You know, it wasn't necessarily a heel move. Has he had confrontations with anybody else? We could say that he was, you know, pure, you know, he's been a dick towards Ricochet, I think, but, you know, more along the confident of, you know, along the lines of like what Moxley does, you know, where he's kind of like, you know, I just, you know, I'm the best and I'm going to fight anybody. So I don't think he's really done anything that is straight up like, oh my God, he's, you know, he's someone that we need to root against morally, you know, that he hasn't done anything that's, you know, morally, like, you know, reprehensible he crossed the line that we can't get back from. So I think that's where he's at right now.
Yeah.
There was a question about the New Day, and I hadn't talked about that yet.
Yeah, just Wade Barrett was channeling Wade Keller describing Imperium's feelings towards New Day, making them feel like babyfaces because of how much they despise New Day's antics and clowning performances.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I think last week I might have mentioned that Gunther showing up behind Kofi last week was like great, and I'm like, you know, it feels like so much like a babyface thing because it's, you know, the whole the ring is sacred. We're wrestlers. We're not performers, and I'm like, yeah, I'm like all in on Imperium on that. While you know they turned that into a performance joke, and I was like, I was just gonna DM you like the rolling eyes emoji when that happened, because I'm like, I so hated that. I'm like, you know, let me, you know, Wade's busy. He's writing, so I don't want to. But, you know, that's not the worst one. The one that's been bugging, because they used it last week, it didn't really get a reaction this was in the back, but you couldn't hear any sort of reaction, calling them Imperial Yuck, because it's not Imperial Yum. It's like, what are they doing? I mean, when there's a modicum of seriousness to the New Day, I like them, and I like that they goof off, but they it's almost like they take it to a point to try your patience to see if the crowd turns on them. I think at this point they're trying. At this point they're trying to change, and the crowd just won't let them. I think they're the ones stuck in a horror movie that they're trying to make these skits so bad and so aggravating to get the crowd, to get the regular crowd to change, but nobody wants. And it feels like they're in purgatory. at this point, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's frustrating. And what was frustrating to me is when I saw that they showed up on NXT, I'm like, thank God. Maybe we'll have like a month or two and they'll be down in NXT dealing with stuff down there.
I know.
And we get a break because
yeah.
they're, you know, they're building
yeah.
other tag teams right now. We got the Viking Raiders coming up. We've got El Legado. We have Hit Row, you know, maybe start building them up as they fight each other. You know, and Imperium, we've got this stuff going on. We could probably, I haven't seen too much of it, but I'm kind of hoping for a Braun Ricochet buddy team. You know, so so we're seeing that, and I'm like, hey, you know, move, you know, have them go to NXT, help them out there, help out the new teams, you know, maybe, you know, freshen themselves up a bit. And it does let us who watch SmackDown, you know, they're off the screen, so when they come back for a program, we'll be more excited to see them. But, you know, they're putting them in programs, and they're just there to just buy time for Ricochet for a week. So, you know, it's just aggravating, and I feel bad because I like them.
Yeah. All right, Javier, do you have any last topic for us? And, Nick, I'll say the same thing to you because I got to wrap up here.
Excuse us, Wade.
Well, you know, I don't want to keep you too long, Nick. It's getting late there. It's midnight. Javier, anything you want to add? I know we've kind of thrown more to you than you've thrown to us.
Nick, you want to go first?
No, I feel like we've kicked it all around, honestly.
Okay, yeah, there one I don't want, it's not really a correction, but to fill in something that you were talking about, the Strowman
interaction,
thing.
Demeanor.
Interaction, yeah. What Strowman said was, you're still in the performance center, right? We need you. Well, hurry up, because we need you here. And he said maybe you could come and get these hands. That's why Stevenson said, yeah, I'll look you up when I get up here.
Gotcha.
Okay. All right. Cool. Good. Yep.
And the other thing was mainly just referencing something about that you guys talked about on The Fix about Hunter hiring too many of, you know, the NXT people. You know, The Fix where you straight up lied to Todd that I called him old. Thank you for that, Wade.
I did not overtly say that.
How old is Todd? 60?
He's early 40s.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, he's younger than I am.
Price.
You know, you guys talked about Hunter. He didn't like, you know, say it was a bad thing, but just something to keep an eye on. It also helps, you know, because I think he's more comfortable with these people. That these are people that he knows he could get along with and would, you know, and has a good relationship with, so they won't be headaches as he, you know, continues to build the roster. I think that's why it's more comfortable for him to hit those people than other people that are in the indies that he's going to have to, you know, they have to work into the WWE system and there will have to be an onboarding process. With these people, they're just plug and play. So I think that's more of it. And I think that's also, but I think that the downside of that is the fact that I think he is, you know, also saying, okay, we're going to pick up where we left off, not knowing that, you know, they're people who have jumped back on since then or are not really familiar with the stuff they're doing. So.
And they wouldn't have made it as far as they did in NXT if they weren't vetted by him and he didn't believe in them. So, you know, he's not bringing in people just because they're in NXT. He's bringing in people not because they're NXT people, but because when he's in charge of a company, he believes in them. And it just so happens that the company he's in, you know, the shows he's in charge of right now include Raw and SmackDown. So people he believes in are going to end up on that show too. We're going through a cycle, you know, where it's people that Vince McMahon didn't believe in and Paul Levesque is invested in them and does believe in them. And so, you know, we're going to see him. So, you know, a year from now, it's just going to be a different story in that sense. There won't be that same, I don't want to say stigma, but that same path that they took that leads to some people going, oh, it's almost like nepotism or something. It's like, no, these are just wrestlers he believed in and he thinks they're ready for the big stage.
Yeah. And even if he sees.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Javier. Yeah.
And even if he does see weaknesses in them, he knows that he can work around it and have and use them for now, you know. So it's sort of like how Emma came in as a person who could just, you know, job to the, you know, like the Raquel Rodriguez and stuff, so they can actually be built up. So which I think is it's good long-term planning for the health of the company, which I've been saying for a long time, or I think we've all been saying this, I'm not taking credit for it, that it's one thing that they've kind of overlooked, and, you know, is why, you know, so it's they're in a rebuilding phase, basically, so.
Yeah.
And
cool. I think we do have the show covered. I just scrolled through my write-up on the show, and I don't have anything else to add. Nick, you still have nothing to add?
Nothing to add, sir.
Cool. Javier, thank you.
Nick, I wish I could say it was good talking to you. No, I'm kidding. It is good talking to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now I feel like I'm the one in the horror movie, guys.
Wait, so Javier, when you DM'd me and said you didn't like Nick, that was just a joke? Just now?
Wade, seriously?
You asked,
I mean,
well, you didn't say you didn't like him. You asked what's up
with credibility. You're stretching your credibility, okay?
Why do you get the joke and I don't?
In reality, I have a love-hate relationship with you, Nick, because when you're right, you're like knock it out of the park. When I disagree with you, you are so infuriating. I can understand why the relationship between you and Tom.
And I don't even think of you, Javier. So this works out really well.
And that's awesome. I mean, and that is awesome.
No, I'm kidding, Javier. Go ahead.
You make me have to cut. You make me have to get energy up or whenever you're on, because I'm like, I got to keep up with Nick, man. This is not going to be easy.
You got to bring it. Oh, well, there's a weakness, Nick. Yeah, next season.
When I sense it, I go for it. Wade, listen, I try to bring the energy, but Javier, I must admit, by the time you come on the call, I'm starting to wane a little bit. So
see, you're a half marathon runner, Nick, because Tom limits the show to an hour, and you come on here and you got to go too. You got to go too.
You know what? I just love all the insults I just got. So remind me again why I don't do this show. And yet all of the callers love to hear from me. So maybe the producer should make some notes.
Wait a second.
Thanks, everybody. Great to hear from you.
Nick, you said you're winded by the time Javier comes on an hour and a half into the show. I'm just saying, you know, you trained for 1 hour, not two. That's not an insult.
Maybe I'm winded by the first thing he says, something along those lines.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Javier.
Yep.
All right. Take care, everybody. Good night.